Hello and welcome to the Investors Chronicle Companies and Markets Show. I am John Heumann, editor of the Investors Chronicle. I'm joined today by Bradley Gerard. How are you doing, Bradley?
I'm great, thanks, John.
Good. And Mark Robinson. How are you, Mark?
Oh, very well, thank you, John.
It's been a while since we've
been together. I did actually host a podcast a few weeks ago in your absence.
I wasn't here.
Oh, no.
I haven't had the pleasure of your company for a while.
Well, that's all I'm saying. Thank you very much.
In the podcast
room. It's a pleasure to be here.
Good. Okay, right. So it's been a funny week for the magazine because it's the week in which we publish our top 100 funds. So that dominates the magazine. About 20 pages long, I think. It's a real in-depth read into which funds you should be buying if that's the way you want to invest. But it all, unfortunately, it squeezes out a lot of other content. So the company's team, I wouldn't say have a week off, but
it didn't feel like a week off.
It never does, though, does it? It never does.
I had a quick rifle through the funds piece, though, and having obviously covered funds for a few years prior to joining the IC, there's some interesting mentions in there. It's definitely worth a read, everyone who's listening.
I think it's a great list. I mean, you know, we started this 5-6 years ago. I mean, you probably followed the story, Bradley, of the kind of criticisms of active management that have been sort of growing louder over the summer.
Absolutely.
And it's what I write about in my editorial this week. You know, to the point where the Investment Association has been, you know, essentially forced to defend itself, its industry, from some of the charges being levelled at it. You know, and you know, you would be forgiven for thinking that active management is, you know, something that as a retail investor you should avoid because you're just paying over the odds for a load of old rubbish. And I don't think that's true.
No, you can do. It is possible to pay too much for a fund that's not very good. But as you say, there are some very good managers who demonstrate repeatably strong performance.
Absolutely. And I guess that's why we did this, because there are thousands of funds out there, funds. And we look at investment trusts as well, which they get less attention.
They do. And I think that's a good thing, actually, because trusts are often overlooked by private investors. And the fact you can buy a pool of assets for arguably less than their actual current value is can be a very good thing.
Absolutely. So I say they get less attention. They get less attention outside
generally,
of the pages of the Investors Chronicle.
We've got John Barron this week.
John Barron loves investment trusts.
Indeed.
He's obviously published his latest portfolio update this week. But we give them plenty of attention, and there's plenty in the top 100 funds. But you know, my view is there are managers worth paying for. I do not buy into the idea that stock picking is impossible, that you cannot be a good stock picker. And it's what I talk about in my editorial. Now, the thing I really liked about this year's Top 100 Funds, which was put together by Leonora Walters, who is our new personal finance editor, was that she really kind of looked at some of the things that make the guys running these funds tick. You know, some of the strategies, philosophies, and you know, they're not too far away from our own.
That can only be good.
Absolutely. But you'd have to read my editorial to find out what they are. I managed to compress the top 100 funds into one 15-line paragraph.
I have to say, I was quite impressed by that when I read it.
Okay, right. So let's have a chat about news, and then we'll have a look at some of the results we've covered
Indeed.
This week. Bradley, what's going on in the world at large, 7 days?
I guess a couple of things that kind of are linked and stand out and are interesting given a certain recent announcement by a small cap company. So we've had the 1 trillionth pound of dividends paid out just within this century, so within the past 15 and nearly 3/4 years, which is just an interesting figure on its own. But it comes in a week whereby consultancy Mercer showed that the UK's collective pension deficit is £189 billion, which is a record high, apparently. So, and that's interesting because obviously it was last week that the engineer Carr Close said that its dividend was likely to, was in danger, basically, and would probably not be paid or be paid to a lower extent because of issues around the size of its pension deficit.
Well, this is something we're going to look at, isn't it?
Yeah, we've got a feature in the works at the moment where we'll be taking a look at small cap and AIM stocks, trying to work out which ones are vulnerable, looking at their distributable reserves, their cash positions, and looking at the different, you'd have to go by line and look at the Articles of Association for a lot of these companies as well, because you can't treat them all in the same way. And they may have restrictions linked to their dividends and their pension obligations too.
It's certainly something we were interested in because, some of the larger dividend paying shares have become quite expensive. So, a lot of investors have trended towards sort of smaller companies that are paying dividends. And Carclo, never quite get my tongue around that one, is an example of how where the risks lie in that approach. So we're just going to help people try and understand.
Well, yeah, and the reason we picked that end of the market as well is many of these companies wouldn't be in the position of the large caps, who in some cases are often able and willing to borrow to fund their dividend payments.
Absolutely. Okay.
Yeah, it's a big issue, so I think it's one that people need to be sort of cognizant of, and obviously we're very aware it's going on, and as Mark says, we'll have hopefully more on it quite soon.
Absolutely.
I guess on a similar kind of trend, or similar theme rather, a big factor in the reason why pension deficits are rising are because gilt yields are falling so fast, and gilts are a common asset purchased by pension funds. The UK government managed to issue £2.5 billion worth of debt this week at an all-time low yield of 0.685%. And that's down from 0.91% just in July. So you can see that kind of risk-off trade really is what arguably it is. And there is a sort of a very well-established base of government bond purchasers, but for the yields to fall that aggressively does suggest that there's a bit of uncertainty on behalf of investors generally if government bond yields have been pushed down that far.
Yeah, I think it's
priced. Are you looking at the yield curve, Robbo?
Well, I was looking at the yield curve as well.
But
I think a lot of it's priced in more intervention on the part of the Bank of England as well.
True.
There's no doubt that Mark Carney's going to look at intervening in the market, depending on what sort of trade arrangements that we manage to strike in the next 6 months or so. We'll get some idea, presumably, once we once the government triggers Article 50.
So Mark Carney, right. So this week, has he had his Gordon Brown save the world moment? Because because we've had some pretty decent economic data this week, and I think Mark Carney has come out and said, defending himself from accusations that his forecasts for the economy prior to the referendum were overly negative,
and he's since been a bit trigger happy.
and since he's been a bit trigger happy, but apparently he saved the world. We're not going to have a recession now, as many people predicted we would. A number of banks have apparently. I heard something I'd never heard before. Cancelled their forecasts.
Yeah,
I've never heard anyone talk about cancelling forecasts before. Well, but it's all down to him.
Well, doubtless we will.
it's all down to.
Well done, Gordon. Carney. I mean, Mark.
Doubtless we will have a recession. It's just the timing that he got wrong.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you know, recessions, they kind of come and go. That's kind of the way economies work.
Exactly.
But we're not having one on Carney's watch.
I mean, I read in the magazine last week, I think a greater threat to stability in the UK and the European mainland as well are the Italian banks. The Spanish banks have recovered to a certain degree and they've been recapitalized. But it's very doubtful, or I find it very doubtful, that all of their loan exposure is fully appreciated, especially when you look at Spanish regional banks. But we won't get into that right now.
No. I thought the Italian bank problem had gone away. Maybe you just stopped writing about it.
Yeah, we got bored of it.
Bored with that. Yeah. Okay.
Another thing of interest I thought was, struck me as interesting anyway, was Hargreaves Lansdown, so the very Britain's largest broker, FTSE 100 company. They have said they'll not be entering the secondary annuity market when that launches next year. I find that kind of interesting because obviously that part of the government's pension freedom legislation was quite a key plank, really. The fact that obviously the biggest thing is that people don't have to buy an annuity. That's very good. But the ability for them to sell their annuity was also another key element of the policy. And it's interesting that Hargreaves is deciding to not take part in it. In the words of Tom McPhail, who's the head of retirement policy, he says, for the majority of people, it is likely to be a poor decision. That's kind of noteworthy, I think.
What do Hargreaves want people to do instead?
Well, they're considering launching an advisory service for people who may be contemplating selling their annuity. Mm-hmm. But I think what they would suggest people do is properly consider at the outset whether an annuity is right for you. And if it's not, then you shouldn't go down that route. And I know what you're going to say. You can say, well, what if someone's got an annuity, they want to change their mind now? Well, they can sell it, but what Hargreaves is saying is you're unlikely to get a very good outcome from that.
But you could say that Hargreaves' model is much better served by people opting for the drawdown route anyway.
That's arguable, but also because of their size, if they launch the secondary annuity service, the likelihood is it would be well populated and larger than competitors who decide to launch. So you're right, drawdown is arguably more beneficial for their business model. That's pretty much without doubt, I'd say. But the fact they're not looking to enter this market, and they could, with their scale and size and popularity, no doubt do well in it if they wanted to. The fact they're dodging it just struck me as quite interesting, and perhaps a bit of a an amber flashing light to those people who are thinking of selling their annuities to really do the homework before they before they do so.
Decent results this week, though, from Hargreaves. On page 69 of the magazine. I think we downgraded them from buy to hold, but only on the basis of valuation. Hargreaves shares always look expensive, but, it's not a business that doesn't look like it's running out of steam.
Well, no, it doesn't. I think their chief executive, Ian Gorham, actually, he announced his retirement after about 7 years at the company, from memory. But, in spite of that, it's just such a well-established beast. And on the valuation point, 34 times is pricey. There might be some investors who are also our readers and listeners who might well think, that's worth it. It's worth paying up for.
Mm.
But yeah, it's a very, very decent company.
And I'm sure many of our readers use their services.
I'm sure they're
very,
do.
Very happy with them from what we hear.
That's what people say.
Okay. What else have we got in news, Bradley?
Another thing that's interesting, Theron Mohammed, who is our sort of technology media reporter, he also deals up with all the takeovers and the takeovers page that's published in the magazine. And one thing he said he'd noticed very recently, particularly post-Brexit, was a big flurry in private equity activity. And sure, private equity houses are probably always doing something, not just sitting on their hands, but he just sort of noticed a real spike up in interest of, or basically going both ways. So a lot of private equity bids to take listed companies into off the market. Mm-hmm. And actually there are quite a few other the trend is equally strong the other way. So a few private equity houses are looking to cash in and list companies and make money from, or release the value, I suppose, that they initially saw in their private investments. So there's quite a few examples in there. I mean, one potential listing that Theron notes is CVC Capital Partners, which bought 80% of Sky Bet from Sky in 2015, is apparently looking to float the business next year for about a $1.5 billion valuation.
Another betting company.
Yep. And there was another betting company whose name I forget, but the adverts have Barbara Windsor on them, which also announced an intention to float.
I've not seen those.
Yeah, she's in she's dressed as a fairy or something.
Oh, God, I have seen those, but I can't remember what they are. Yeah, you'd think that all we do in Britain is gamble from the amount of listed gambling companies, but there you go. Now, it is interesting. I mean, the really interesting one there is Pinewood, because, I mean, that's been around for a long, long time, and that's now going private.
Well, shareholders will vote on the recommended offer, so the company has recommended the approach from the private equity purchasers. Yeah, it's not done and dusted yet, but yeah, we'll see what shareholders
say. It's a funny business. I mean, you would have thought, I mean, you know, Pinewood is a leader in its field. I mean, it's one of the biggest studios in Europe, and it, you know, all sorts of amazing films. I'm pretty sure they made some of the Star Wars
film
there. And yet it's never been one that's really works for investors, and I've never understood why.
No, it's true. It's a strange one, and maybe it will work better in private hands, but obviously if you're a shareholder of it, you must see... Well, maybe this is the positive thing to come out of it. Maybe this will be the good end to an investment fantastic.
Maybe it's too lumpy. Maybe the way the business works is just too lumpy for it to work as a public company, where you expect some kind of
regular
consistency and regularity in the numbers coming through.
Although audiences are getting a little bit easier to, I suppose, understand, because you just keep launching things relative to franchises. Even so, it's quite a tricky business to be. Well, I mean, obviously, it's tricky to provide any certainty in any industry, but particularly filmmaking. It's
interesting. I mean, you know, perhaps some businesses are best suited to private ownership. Some businesses are okay in public. I just think it's quite interesting.
Well,
while we've seen a step up in private equity M&A of late as well, is possibly linked to Sterling's fall as well, because Bain have been one of the chief private equity companies moving into and buying up UK assets as well. So, anything they'd be buying would be 15% cheaper than it was 6 months ago.
Yeah,
that's true. What I noticed here, Entertainment One, which is has been a public company for a long time, and I think in its history it's moved from AIM to the main list. I mean, it's done something right. It's got amazing franchises within its business. Yeah. Peppa Pig. I think we talk about Peppa Pig every week.
Yeah, the theme tune's in my head for the rest of the day now. Thank you.
Who's that? Is that a private equity buyer of that? Is it KKR?
KKR is reportedly mulling a bid for it. And that's particularly interesting, given that there was interest in Entertainment One from ITV.
Yeah.
But it seems that the companies have obviously different views of the value of Entertainment One. So ITV has very recently, actually, in the past couple of weeks, walked away way.
Yeah, I mean, do you know one thing I will say though? I mean, this stuff, I don't want to downplay anything we write in the magazine because it is the news and it is what we, you know, what's happening today. But, you know, you look at the history of the stock market, and I was this lunchtime at a memorial service for a former IC editor, a lady called Gillian O'Connor, who's considered one of the great IC editors. And if I can get within spitting distance of her achievements, then I'll consider myself having had a good career. In the back of the order of service was one of her columns. And, you know, she was talking about blue chips and buying shares, which she was able to do then, which we have much more problems with today as journalists. But she said, you know, companies come and go, big companies, you know, I wouldn't buy a blue chip just because it's a blue chip. Companies come and go. And, you know, I was reading through this column, which was only published in 2001. I don't think a single company on that list exists as a standalone listed company.
Really?
Today. You know, it's just the way markets work, isn't it? They just move around and companies get bought, companies get sold, companies get taken private, companies come back, companies evolve. Indeed, yeah, I think it's fascinating. It's very fluid. I thought it was a great column, and I'm pretty sure I've touched on the subject myself. But yeah, it was wonderful. It was a really, really wonderful service. We also heard from Richard Lambert, who's a former editor of the Financial Times, who Gillian also worked for, and Director General of the Confederation of British Industry, I think. And he was describing the IC and as it was in the 1980s. Not changed much. So which are you, Bradley? Young and ambitious or old and weird? Which is apparently how the IC staff has always been. Young and ambitious. Old and weird. Yeah. I'm pointing at Robert.
Yes. It's for the benefit of our listeners.
And I'm somewhere in the middle, I think, yeah? Is that fair? Or am I just old and weird?
It might have been my ambition to be old and weird.
Well, I quite like being old and weird. The IC, it's like Portland.
Yeah.
It's weird. We're weird. As Sir Richard Lambert said, he said, you know, these eccentrics who really should have made fortunes on the other side of the river, choosing to basically spend their time writing copy for the benefit of readers. And it's, yeah, it's true. Why do we do this?
I'm off.
We're off. Anyway, there you go. It's fantastic. It's really good. The IC never changes, but it does. Okay. So anyway, I digress. I wanted to get that in.
Yeah, that was worth mentioning.
Indeed. Okay. Right. What else got Bradley? Sirius Minerals is one that's quite interesting. That Robbo, you have.
Yeah. Well,
I've been intimately involved.
No, actually, I took. I took a positive. I wouldn't say I was bullish on them, but I took. I wouldn't say bullish. As many of our listeners will probably remember, myself and our former colleague Matthew Allen decided to publish a yin and yang feature in.
It wasn't a feature. It was a tip.
It was a tip. Actually, that's it.
Yeah, it was not a successful experiment.
I'm not actually sure about that. We did get a lot of positive feedback, but unfortunately there was quite a lot of negative feedback as well, because it was obviously a confusing...
If we'd have done it as a feature, it would have been great. We did it in the tips pages. Anyway, and
it got people thinking, got people talking, so in that regard, it worked.
It did. So we had a buy tip on... And a sell tip on the same company. Wow.
It was. So Matt effectively played devil's advocate. And
he genuinely believed that it wasn't going to happen.
There's two main points that he was bringing about. The fact that they were trying to get the permissioning process through in an area, it's a national park, North Yorkshire Moors National Park. And plus, just the financing arrangements were, not exactly opaque at that stage, but we certainly had no idea what the eventual bill, and we had no idea how they were hoping to finance this. There was some talk, obviously, of larger companies coming in and helping out through the different stages. But it was just... And that permissioning process dragged on and on and on. And the company itself failed to release enough detail to the market, I would say.
But then what could it say? I'm sure it could say.
We met up with the directors on several occasions as well, and you know, I when it first the idea was first mooted, I thought, well, this could have legs, actually, because I not that I'm an expert in such matters, but I couldn't really see how there would be.
What are you talking about? You're always banging on about potash.
No, but I was thinking from an environmental perspective, it didn't seem to me that it would cause undue damage to the North Yorkshire countryside, the plans in place.
And you care deeply about the North Yorkshire countryside.
I do, actually. I do. Heathcliff, that sort of thing. But anyway, in this week's, there's been an update, and Alex Newman has been looking into it. And Sirius has streamlined their development plans, and now it's been broken up into three stages, Alex was telling me. Somewhere along the line, there's going to be some fairly hefty dilution along the way. But it is actually moving now as well, because for ages the whole project seemed moribund, and this is when the initial enthusiasm, local enthusiasm as well, drained away. So we're getting more details in the coming months on this too. But it does actually seem to be moving in the right direction now. But it's still not clear at this stage. If you're holding stock in Sirius at the moment. The level of dilution in the coming months.
It's a hold. It's not a screaming buy, given the uncertainties that remain. But it's a good piece. And actually, I like this because Dominic over in the control room, Dominic Toms, has put together a really lovely chart here with Alex that they're kind of, you know, this is what we need to see. This is, you know, the progression of a share price. With taking into account the kind of key news events, you're doing something like this for us at the moment with Quadrise, aren't you?
Well, exactly. I won't talk too much about Quadrise as well because it's an upcoming feature as well. With Sirius as well, they've got enhanced institutional backing now too. So I mean, the project itself seems to have legs at long last. But it's been years in the making. We thought originally that it would be between 9 and 15 months before you'd get this permissioning process through. But it just dragged on and on and on. And it was unfortunate as well, because I know for a fact that a lot of our readers took an interest and invested in the company too.
Well, I'll tell you something. If you want to get a residential extension on your house, you know, that your planning process there takes sort of 3 to 6 months. So you were thinking you could push through an enormous mining facility in a national park in 9 to 12 months. Then, in dreamland.
Yeah, Matthew's reservations were spot on. I think I was being slightly disingenuous, really. But I thought at the time that because of the economic benefits that were going to flow into the area, and there's high unemployment rates in that particular part of the world, that it would have been pushed through by local authorities, but
perhaps it'll be part of Theresa May's Northern Powerhouse agenda.
The powerhouse, yeah. Well, perhaps. I mean, it'd be lovely if the project got up and running.
Alex says the project is, if it gets up and running completely, apparently what it will do is bring about a 7% reduction in the UK's trade deficit. It'll bring a 2.3 billion annual contribution to GDP and a 20% boost to North Yorkshire's economy. So, I mean, if it does get off the ground, you know, if you're a brave investor and have a little bit of room in your portfolio for a few shares in this, in, I don't know, a decade's time, could be laughing.
Well, why not? I mean, if you've got you've got a little bit of spare capital and you want to take a punt, why not?
Yeah.
This is a different type of potash mine, and there's no existing market for this particular chemical compound. But the Sirius has undertaken a number of peer-reviewed studies, and all of it points to the efficacy of the product itself. So
it's got a buyer, hasn't it, for the product? We're able to mine it in commercial quantities.
There's a couple or three, I think, in memory. I don't think that's going to necessarily be the issue. And plus, it has environmental benefits as well from standard fertilisers too. So, and it fits in with our general theme, you know, the sort of Jim Rogers banging the drum about having to feed an extra, you know, 3 billion mouths in the coming 30 years or so.
Absolutely. Or we could just use genetically modified crops, which you also love, Robbo.
Well, I wouldn't necessarily love, cover them. Oh, Bayer and Monsanto. That was Bayer and Monsanto, rather. That was another news piece. Did that feature in the magazine?
It did, yeah. It's in the 7 days spread. There's a little update.
Fantastic.
There about that readers can have a look at.
Yeah, because by Monsanto, and then of course the other one is Syngenta, which you've long been a fan of.
Yes. The Chinese, ChemChina, have come in from it, and that's still going through still going through the process at the moment. But I think the last regulatory hurdle, the most important one, was cleared maybe last month. It was last month, I think it was cleared. So it's just going through the process, and you know, maybe by the end of the year, I think.
All right. Should we talk about what a terrible human being Mike Ashley is?
Well, I was going to say, we can't really move on to results until we've talked a little bit about Sports Direct. I think the
That was flippant. I don't know whether he's a terrible human being or not, but there's certainly being some shortcomings in the treatment of other human beings in his company.
Yeah, and he's at least an interesting human being in that the day that he invites pretty much the whole of the UK's press to the Shirebrook warehouse, he happens to accidentally have a wad of £50 notes in his pocket that he has to get out for the security check. I mean, why would you do that?
Loads of money.
Exactly. <Yeah. laughs> just asking for more ire.
Oh, goodness gracious.
So, yeah, they've had a bit of, the PR disaster, really, that is Sports Direct has carried on. Although there are obviously moves to try and reverse that trend by the company by announcing various reviews of working practices and that sort of thing.
Yeah, well, quite right too. Well, they've said 0 hours is going to be banned on the shop floor, but not in the warehouses, and I think...
There were a few caveats and a bit of wiggle room in what they've said they're going to, the review that they're going to carry out.
But then I was listening to the radio on the way into work the other morning, and they're interviewing some staff in some of the warehouses, and I think one guy... I just love the great time. Well, I've had worse jobs. Okay, fair enough. But also I found quite interesting was that you know, in light of some of the things our new Prime Minister has been saying about the way companies are run, they're going to invite a worker onto the board. So, I mean, you know, they will be leading the charge of corporate governance, if that is true. I mean, you know, you go from being the worst to being the best, I guess.
Well, yeah, on paper. I mean, I guess it depends how that actually transpires. But, yeah, so arguably you're right. I mean, the proof will be in the eating, as they say. But
I think they report next week as well.
Oh, do they? Yeah. I used to like this company. In financial terms,
I mean Standard Life Investments, you know, is the second largest shareholder. They're sticking with it. They, as an investment, they see its promise. But in their words, they wrote an open letter to the board. They voted against the company's remuneration report and against the reappointment of all of the non-exec directors.
Was it Royal London who said the board's not fit for purpose?
Yeah, and SLI also said that when they engage with the board, they've had their attempts to engage with it have had little effect. And the responses have been either unconvincing or non-existent. Mm. So there are problems there. We know this. I think perhaps one of the more important things for investors to pay attention to this week, though, is not necessarily just the bad PR that's surrounding the company and the attempts to fight this off, but the fact that in their trading update, there was also a line, not hidden, but it didn't get the biggest bit of coverage, that adjusted cash profits are likely to be 300 million for this financial year, which is down from 381 million in the past financial year. That's a big drop.
It's a big drop, but it's also still a big profit. So it's not like this is a dying business.
Nope, that's true. It's just something the headlines sort of... The stories kind of touched upon this fact, but the headlines were all about the governance thing, which is very important, of course, but the numerics of those cash profits need attention paid to them.
Yeah, indeed. I mean, just turning back to my 15-line roundup of the top 100 funds and, you know, the investment strategies of the UK's best fund managers, one of the things that repeatedly came up in their philosophies was you've got to look at management, you've got to look at corporate governance. These things matter.
They do.
And I think Sports Direct is walking proof that you get corporate governance wrong and it can have terrible implications for investors.
Absolutely. It has the share price of Sports Direct has sort of cratered since December, really. I think it's gone down an awful lot. And that's what kind of when things started, the story started coming out about Shirebrook, about the fact that in effect, some workers were earning less than the minimum wage because of these security checks.
How does a security check affect your wage?
Well, because the argument was that you were spending
time 20 minutes
outside of their hours being checked, so they weren't being paid for that time. And it's not like it's not okay to just for a company to have some of your free time to security check you. It's like, in your contract.
It's like
hours.
If you patted us down every night when we left the office.
Now, there's an idea.
In terms of corporate governance, it doesn't remind me so much, but it brought up Eurasian Natural Resources, which was effectively run like an oligarchy, really. Whereas Sports Direct possibly could say is an autocracy.
Yeah, maybe.
But I couldn't possibly say that.
I tell you what, I mean, you know, let's go from bad management to good management, because on the same page there you've got Ashtead, which is a tool hire business, which also is the subject of Ian Smith's Taking Stock column this week. Ashtead, you look at that, I mean, its share price does wonderfully well. You know, its return on capital is enormous. And what I will say about Ashtead is that when Philip Ryland put together his Best Bosses feature, which he does once a year, Jeff Drabble, I think is the chief exec's name of Ashtead, comes out pretty much top every year. Who's heard of Jeff Drabble?
Not me.
Exactly. Exactly. So, you know, Ashtead, you know, this is I think, is a classic case of good management.
Well, they've done quite well this time around as well because of a pickup in US construction market, which feeds into it. But, yeah, of course.
You've got to play the markets that are put in front of you. You know, it's and they do that very well. And they do that because they are managed very well.
I'll be looking at that in the next issue of the magazine, actually.
Oh.
The US construction market, seeing if there's a feed through into UK companies.
Because can't wait.
Oh. You might have to. I haven't written it yet.
Hurry up. Okay, so before we love you and leave you, let's have a look at a couple of results. Brad, what you got?
Well, I'm going to move on to your favourite topic here, John, trains.
Oh, I thought you were going to say bananas.
Well, I'm going to move on to that afterwards. Trains and bananas, your favourite thing. Everyone knows that.
It used to be sausages.
Go ahead. Basically, obviously, it's Govia joint venture, which runs the Southern Rail services, which are obviously very much in the news at the moment because of they're facing difficulty with their union. They've had to cut down their timetable a lot, and commuters are having a torrid time who can only use those services trying to get into London and back home again. But actually, as an investor, things aren't that bad, and pre-tax profits are actually up more than a quarter. And the rail division itself reported a 5% rise in operating profits. And actually, speaking to the company...
That's just going to drive people mad.
No, I know. Speaking to the company, the Govia contractor actually does, to some extent anyway, take into account the changes that the company was going to have to make to the franchise, and also protects it partially against industrial action. So while Govia is still loss-making, and the Go Ahead is not making money from Govia yet, and it is still paying the government more than £220 million for the pleasure of having the franchise, the company, from a profitability point of view, is doing quite well.
And you've got them on a buy, the shares.
I know.
Who'd have thunk it?
I know.
You know, half this building coming via that line.
There'll be a lot of sort of, I'll be getting frowned at in the lift. But yeah, I mean, it's obviously it's not just UK Rail. It's a bus company. It's got interests overseas now as well. It's won contracts recently in Singapore for bus contracts, Germany for rail contracts. So it is quite well diversified. So as an investment, quite good. As a passenger, you might not like the fact that it's doing so well.
Yeah, UK Rail is a funny beast. But as you say, diversification, I think, is what a lot of these companies are doing to try and get around that.
So, absolutely. And then moving on to bananas, your other favourite thing.
Yay!
So Fivesuch is interesting because today they announced the purchase of a Canadian mushroom business, their second Canadian mushroom business.
I was going to say, I thought they already bought a mushroom.
Yep, they did. Yeah. They bought one in April, and today they've just bought another one. So going from bananas to mushrooms, it seems. So that's an interesting development there. And we initially actually, Fife's was a speculative buy tip, actually initiated by Julia Bradshaw, who used to be with us. And part of the rationale for that speculative buy tip was that it was going to be bought by rival Chiquitos. That deal fell through. And now it's interesting that Fife's has sort of turned into the acquirer.
Yeah, it's quite a biggish company.
Yeah.
Been around a long time.
It's been around a long time. It's getting bigger. It's obviously clearly moving into new territory, what with these two Canadian mushroom businesses.
Yeah, it's been a good buy tip.
It has.
Even though the takeover grounds for that buy tip never really came to pass.
True.
But yes, good businesses. If they're going to get bought, you might as well buy them.
Yep.
Robbo, what we got?
There's a couple of things, actually. I was looking at Plus 500 results this week as well. They've actually seemed to have bounced back quite a bit from their compliance mishap from last year. Big customer churn there, that's the only thing, but they've
it's the nature of that business, I think.
It is the nature of the business, but why I thought this is interesting this week, this issue, because it contrasts with the fortunes of CMC. CMC were pointing to the Brexit effect, and in fact, Plus 500 mentioned this as well. But you would think for both companies, increased volatility in the market would have provided a boon, really.
I thought CMC said that volatility was not as strong as
This is the point, that they were expecting volatility in the wake of the vote. But of course, Mark Carney's intervention, which we alluded to earlier on, and the resilience of the UK economy means that volatility rates have actually been relatively stable. And so basically, a lot of their clients are actually, they're not bothering to go into new positions and they're not adding to existing ones. It's a wait and see at the moment. And I think it's just a timing issue between both companies, actually. I looked at a Numis note, and I don't think that the note picked up on that well enough. You know, it's been a decent period for plus 500. But then again, as I say, it's very difficult to work out trends for this company. So, because the result was written up by Emma Powell, and I was asking her about it. But this customer churn makes it very difficult to discern trends. Or at least I find it that way anyway.
Look at that dividend yield.
Yeah, it's incredible. But
I mean, you know, you look at a yield like that, 9%?
Well, I know.
And you think
alarm bells.
This is not right.
No, it's alarm bells. Anything above 7%, Algie Hall tells me.
So, above 7? I'd say above 6. I'm nervous when anything's getting into this.
Yeah.
In this low interest rate environment, I mean, anything above even 5, I'm looking at thinking, quizzically wondering whether there's something wrong.
Yeah, when you see a fig like that, it pays to look twice at the company.
That's all we can say. Look twice. Yeah. And we've got them on a hold. Even at that yield, not screaming buy.
No. Well, I think we're waiting and seeing as well. I mean, you know, things seem to be going reasonably well at the moment, but it's very difficult to know, 6 months down the track what's going to be happening.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you very much.
There was a couple of others that I looked at and thought was interesting this week as well. Well, at least Alex Newman has given the latest write-up on Hunting, which supplies oil services equipment.
That was a horror show of a situation there.
Well, exactly. But it has been for a number of years. But I've been speaking to the chief executive, Dennis Proctor, for years now. And I'll say one thing about Dennis. He's got to be the most candid chief executive that I've ever spoken to.
Well, that's good too. We like that.
Well, exactly. I mean, he's told you exactly that the company has been struggling. And it's a quality company as well.
I had a friend who works for them, actually.
All right.
I know it very well. He's worked for years.
But as I'm of the opinion, I don't know if Alex Newman shares the opinion, that we're going to see an opposite and corresponding spike in oil prices eventually, because so much conventional production has been taken out from future years. And at some point, Eastern demand is going to catch up. The market's going to slip into equilibrium. And once it goes into equilibrium, I think it's going to push very heavily the other way. And so then we'll see a corresponding bump back for companies in the oil services sector as well, because they're obviously the first ones to suffer when the oil price goes down, but they're also the first ones to pull out when it goes back up again.
Indeed.
I suspect that they're going to be a little bit more cautious and circumspect in the way they build their business next time around. But coming out the other end, I think Hunting is a quality business.
Absolutely. Well, I guess, you know, being circumspect after a period of difficulty is exactly what we've seen with the house building sector, for example.
Yeah.
You know, got a bit carried away pre-2007-08. And they've built themselves back up in a way that is much more considered and risk averse than they had previously.
Good numbers for Redrow this week.
Yeah.
As well.
And
as
Barrett as well, we had some results.
Barrett as well. Good. As Jonas mentioned, I think Redrow were a little bit late coming to the party initially, so which might have been something of an advantage where they're concerned.
Indeed. Well, we've got the post-referendum, post-non-recession share price bounce, which you can see smattered throughout the magazine. There's this kind of very noticeable hockey stick effect on many share prices of late.
I might just highlight another one that Emma's written this week about Ashmore, because we've been talking a lot about emerging markets, and ostensibly the numbers weren't terribly good. You know, their assets under management fell quite sharply during the period. But it was noticeable, looking at the results, that in the second half and in their final quarter as well, we'd seen a bit of a turnaround in activity too. So, I mean,
I think there's growing interest in emerging markets.
Yeah, I think so.
I think the big... I mean, it was like 2 or 3 years of poor sentiment towards emerging markets.
Yeah, 2 years,
it's flown by. But I think sentiment is shifting there. And you can see that in the share price.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. It's sort of in parallel with the commodity price slump as well, which is both it's causal and also symptomatic of emerging market decline too. But now we're seeing commodity prices bottoming out, stabilizing in some cases, and Alex is of the opinion that in some metals we'll see a rebound towards the end of this year as well. And that falls into line with the general feeling on emerging markets.
Alex is having a look at he's done a commodity spread for us for next week's mag.
He has, and he's looking at specialist metals next week as well, looking at things like zinc and zirconium. These sort of ones that aren't mentioned.
All right, good stuff. I think that's all we've got time for. Thank you, Bradley. Thank you, Mark, for your contributions this week. There's plenty more in the magazine, certainly in the personal finance and funds section, as well as their enormous Top 100 Funds feature. They will be talking about that in a lot more detail than we have on their podcast tomorrow. We've got the usual tips, the usual comments, and a fair number of results this week. Hopefully it's going to slow down a bit now.
Sector focus linked to the NHS, or sort of opportunities arising from the NHS.
Yes, indeed. The kind of private opportunities in the NHS, which I think I'd asked you for as a feature, but there you go.
Now it's handed on to one of the young, ambitious writers, as opposed to the old, weird ones.
Yes, the old, weird ones who don't listen to me.
What?
Anyway, thank you very much. Thank you for listening. Top 100 Funds. Can't miss it. It looks sort of like Blade Runner, I think, the cover this week. 4/17, all good news agents, or go online and subscribe. Thank you very much. See you soon.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.